afternoon, everybody. This is the Reverend Blake Ruby from San Antonio, Texas. Welcome to my show, The Church of the Soul's Evolution. I have a guest with me today. His name is Preston Dennett. He's the author of 32 UFO books and a man just like myself who knows without a doubt in his mind that we are not alone in the universe. And today we're going to talk with him and we're going to find out some more about some of these beings that are out there. And oh my God, they are so incredible. And Preston, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Preston, is it true? Do you think that here on Earth, all this life, all the different species, over a million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish in these oceans, seas, rivers, and lakes, over 10,000 types of birds, over 10,000 types of reptiles, over 9,000 types of amphibians, over 5,000 types of mammals. Well, for one thing, if all that life happened by accident, it's logical to assume that it could happen by accident anywhere in the universe since they're discovering more and more planets each day with the Kepler and James Webb Space Telescopes. But all of that life I mentioned, do you think, in your opinion, after seeing some of your videos and reading a little bit about you, that there's a process of evolution going on in our universe, which is a tremendously, incomprehensibly huge place, and this life here on Earth is also elsewhere in different stages of evolution, like the praying mantis, insectoids, and the grays, and all the different types of extraterrestrials. There's even feline, you know, there is dog ETs, feline ETs. There, any animal you can think of on Earth might be living on another planet at some stage in evolution where it has gotten up on its hind legs. And over the thousands and perhaps millions of years has reached a level of evolution where they have transcended their planet and began voyaging through outer space and doing what everyone likes to do best, explore. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it would be the height of arrogance, honestly, to think that we are alone in this universe. I think most mainstream scientists even agree, even if they're skeptical of the UFO and ET phenomenon, agree that we couldn't possibly be the only ones. And just taking a look at the night sky and seeing all those stars out there, I think we have a little bit of an idea of just how vast this universe is. But the chances of us being alone are virtually nil, infinitesimal. And I also think if you take a look, an objective look, not through the lens of prior beliefs, at the evidence that we have collected over the past 100 years alone, I think it speaks very loudly that we are not alone. And the reports that are coming in from people all over the planet, which are really remarkable in their consistency of detail, reporting humanoids, people very much like us, I would say much more like us than different, really show exactly what, you know, has to be true, that we are not alone. And I find it fascinating that so many people do report details that are just strikingly similar to a point that I think we can absolutely exclude any possibility of hoaxes or anything like that, mental illness, misperceptions, and so forth. Yeah, there's no way we are alone, and I think the evidence speaks very clearly that we are being visited.
Preston, do you think the media nowadays is kind of holding back what they know, and they're not really reporting the truth, that they don't want to? I've heard this before, that there are some people that are within the major news stations whose job it is to suppress information about the truth regarding extraterrestrials. And do you think that the world would be a better place, a different place, if we knew without a doubt, if we had scientifically proven, you know, if like E.T. decided to land in that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and make contact, would we be in a better place? Do you think?
I do. I don't think there's anything to benefit by covering up the truth. It just breeds distrust, paranoia, fear. And I think that the media has been largely complicit with this. I'm not sure that they are necessarily the folks directly behind the cover-up, but that there is a cover-up is demonstrably true. And we know the media is towing the party line. This has been proven. There's a gentleman by the name, I forget his first name, his last name is Hansen. He wrote a book called The Missing Times. And he showed very clearly in black and white that many mainstream media outlets absolutely quash any stories having to do with UFOs. Some manage to squeeze through because they're undeniable. Too many witnesses, too much evidence. But by and large, the media does not cover UFO subjects. That's changed quite a bit over the past few years. But even now, even with these congressional hearings, we are not getting the whole truth of this subject. I think the world would be a much better place. It's very interesting because back in 1947, when the so-called Roswell UFO crash happened in New Mexico, there was a press release that went nationwide, really worldwide, that we finally had captured a flying saucer. And of course, they retracted it the next day. But if they had not retracted it, and we were allowed to study this subject without all the gaslighting and the ridicule and the fear and the disinformation surrounding the subject, I think we'd be in a much different place. The ETs are incredibly advanced. I think that's one thing almost all researchers do agree upon. And it offers us such a tremendous, unparalleled, unprecedented opportunity to advance human knowledge in so many different fronts. Everything from spirituality to medicine to astronomy to all the hard sciences. It's a lost opportunity. But really, it's such a shame that this subject isn't treated with more openness and transparency. Sooner or later, this cover-up will end. Disclosure will happen simply for one reason only. You cannot hide the truth forever.
Yes, right. Do you know Dr. Stephen Greer?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, we're not like good friends, but we've certainly, I've talked to him many, many times. I've met him several times. I'm very familiar with him.
He's an amazing person. Would you say he's probably, I know he's ahead of the Disclosure Project, but as far as knowledge of ETs and their propulsion systems and different types of ETs, would you say he's like one of the top people in the world with that knowledge? Maybe
well,
he's the target.
Yeah, I can't say I agree with everything he says, and I think that's probably true for most researchers. Not all of us agree on all things. He's certainly a very influential researcher. And has done very important work in terms of the disclosure movement. Absolutely. I do have some really researchers that I respect a great deal. Now, Dr. James McDonald, he's no longer with us. J.L. Hynek also passed on. I love the earlier researchers, Jim and Carl Lorenzen. These were the folks who really blazed the path forward. Gave this subject legitimacy, well, I should say some of the legitimacy that we enjoy today. There's some really good researchers out there right now, don't get me wrong. I also love Barbara Lamb, Kathleen Marden, she's another researcher I really respect. Michael Schrat, he's doing amazing work in terms of the UFO crash retrieval field. So I think all of us play an important role. Because what we're dealing with is a subject that, again, is being viciously covered up. People have lost their lives over this.
Yeah.
So it's going to take an army of researchers to get the truth out.
Yes. I think for the people who really don't want to do the research, to them, they don't believe, the non-believers, they just aren't really willing to do the research because the evidence is there. There's so much evidence that's undeniable. And one thing, when you were talking about Roswell, Major Jeffrey Marcel, who recovered the wreckage there of that spacecraft, and later had to change the story that it was a weather balloon, and he was told to be quiet and not talk about it. But just before he died on his deathbed, and there's a video of it, he said he was told to lie, to cover that up. And I mean, what more evidence? Why would a man lie on his deathbed? You know, with just a few more days left of life, he told the truth. Yeah, I did recover parts of a flying saucer, and there were some alien bodies that were recovered. Why? I think it's just because of, as I mentioned, the mainstream media suppresses it, you know. But the evidence is out there, and that's what you present in your material time after time, different instances. I was reading about the, I was watching the video of the, you've got quite a few encounters, but the last one I was looking at was the two boys up in Langley, British Columbia, who had an encounter with a praying mantis insectoid. And I know they're out there. And have you ever heard of a YouTube channel called Astro Legends TV?
It's not ringing a bell, but
you ought to check it out. It's pretty cool. They've got, I mean, some of it seems to be way out in right field, but they've got like four videos of different types of ETs within the Milky Way galaxy. And I mean, as I mentioned before, that there are many, many species of cat ETs, you know, that evolved to the point where they're standing on their feet and they've got heads of lions or tigers or cheetahs or jaguars, you know, and they've got, they're humanoid.
I have a few reports of that for sure. Yeah, I'm right with you. The evidence at this point is mountainous. It's undeniable. Those who are skeptical of this subject honestly have not done their homework. They've not done their research. And I stand by that statement because this is not just anecdotal eyewitness testimony, which, by the way, I think we have enough to prove this subject in a court of law. But we have, you know, hundreds upon hundreds, well, really it's thousands of landing trace cases. There's the radar visual cases where these objects have been caught on radar. The photographic evidence is very persuasive. There's medical evidence. I wrote a whole book about people who were healed as a result of a UFO encounter. And this is really undeniable evidence. But we have implant removals as well, which show very unusual properties to these objects that have been placed in people's bodies. And of course, animal reactions. There's a substance called angel hair that not a lot of people know about, a sort of spider web, almost cotton candy type substance that's emitted from UFOs or caused by a reaction to the atmosphere, to the plasma fields surrounding these craft. At any rate, this has been collected and studied in a laboratory setting and found to be very unusual. So the evidence is there. And it breaks my heart when I see people like Jesse Marcel, tears in his eyes, telling, you know, finally finding the courage to tell the truth. I've talked to a number of whistleblowers myself who were quite literally on their deathbed and finally felt it was time to do their duty, their patriotic duty, to tell the truth and let all humanity know, because we all deserve to know the truth. I find it crazy that the folks behind the cover-up feel like they can handle the truth and we can't. I'm not even sure that's the driving force behind the cover-up. I honestly think it's greed, power, control. You know, money's often the bottom line. But the huge number of cases, to me, presents the best evidence out there because it's I mean, even in terms of onboard UFO encounters, which really dives to the heart of the phenomena, you used to think those were quite rare. I think a lot of researchers are now reversing their opinions. J. Allen Hynek, father of modern ufology, was quoted as saying, one in 40 people have had an onboard experience. I heard that very early on in my research, back in the 1980s. I thought, wow, that's a lot. It was in 1991 that the Roper organization, this is a formal professional polling organization, did a survey with a lot of people, a very large sample, and found that about one in 50 people show the markers of being a UFO contactee, of having been on board. So the point is, there are millions upon millions of people having these experiences. And if you look at the database of just MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and NUFORC, the National UFO Reporting Center, here in the U.S. alone, together they have well over 200, almost 300,000 UFO reports. Now you could add, you could add QFOS, the Center for UFO Studies. You could add NICAP, National Investigative Committee of Aerial Phenomena, APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. Again, this is just the U.S. So we're now looking at a worldwide database of probably more accurately several million documented encounters. So people always ask me, like, why don't the ETs disclose? I think they have. I think they've done their part. Really, the rest is up to us, because they have showed themselves to so many people.
Yes. I'm sure you've heard of Travis Walton in that movie Fire.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, absolutely. What more do people want? I mean, the man was abducted, gone for 5 days. They thought that he'd been killed by his co-workers, and he just didn't disappear anywhere and come back 5 days later, you know, with a growth beard on his face. And his story, you know, afterward, him and all his co-workers taking multiple lie detector tests and passing each time, except for, I forget his name, Alan, the guy that he was having trouble with, you know, would get into fights with, and they didn't get along well. His lie detector tests were inconclusive sometimes, but the rest of them, six, seven of his co-workers, those loggers, passed multiple lie detector tests saying that they saw a flying saucer, and they saw it hit Travis with a, well, he probably stepped into the electromagnetic field, which was underneath the spacecraft when it was interacting with the magnetic field of the Earth, you know, and he didn't realize that. He got too close.
Yeah.
They thought it was a beam, you know, and a weapon, and they took off because they thought they're probably going to get shot next with that same weapon. But, I mean, that's evidence to me, that whole story. That, and watching Travis on videos and appearing on Larry King Live, I mean, this man is telling the truth. But then there are people like Philip Glass, I'm sure you've heard of him, who are...
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, I knew Stanton Friedman, and he was a good man. I met him one time.
Yeah.
He was from my hometown where when I lived in New Brunswick, Canada, from Fredericton, New Brunswick. I lived there from 62 to 68. I'm almost 72. I'll be 72 in August. But he was a great man, you know, for the cause. And he was, yeah, I think he wrote a book after Roswell, if I can remember the title correctly. But
yeah, Stanton Friedman was a truth scientist who objectively studied the subject. I had the wonderful honor of meeting him as well. And a good researcher, for sure. It's always nice when we have scientists entering this field. And it takes a lot of courage for people to put their reputation online, such as Travis Walton. He suffered intensely after coming forward, even though he had a lot of witnesses to support him. It's a tremendous case, very well authenticated. It's just amazing to me that so many people really don't talk about this. The vast majority of people who have this experience do not talk about it because they don't want to be ridiculed. They don't want to be disbelieved. This has broken apart families. I've talked to many people who only agreed to talk to me on the condition of absolute anonymity. They'll tell me things like, you know, I haven't told my spouse. I've got, you know, they always say some caveat of like, there's no history of mental illness in my family. I've got a good job. I'm well educated. Something along these lines. Because this is what we're up against here. So kudos to Travis for coming forward. He really didn't have much of a choice. His case was already very much publicized before he was even returned. But yeah, I had the opportunity to speak with him as well.
Wow.
He had quite a traumatic encounter, and I'm very pleased to now hear that he sort of realized that this is his impression that the ETs were essentially saving his life. And I've come to realize, having interviewed a lot of people who've had this kind of experience, that one of the reasons people are taken on board is all about healing. I wrote a book called The Healing Power of UFOs. It documents some 300 cases all over the world, reaching back more than 100 years, of people healed of just about everything you can think of. I mean, everything from little cuts, colds and bruises, to colds, to much more serious illnesses, which is very encouraging to me.
Yes, and that's a good point, too. I mean, they weren't violent in any way. They were just trying to heal him because, you know, his body had been burnt, you know, high voltage electromagnetic energy. And if they hadn't had, I guess they beamed him on board. And then whatever they did, do you think, let me ask you a question. The first group of ETs that he encountered were like maybe 5 feet tall, puffy white skin, and large heads, big brown eyes. They had the suits on with an emblem somewhere on the chest, I do believe. But then later, after they ran out of the room because he was frightened after he'd been woken up and he wasn't feeling good, and he took a test tube and there was something that looked like that, made a glass and broke it to use as a weapon to defend himself. They left, went down the hall to the right, he went to the left, and then shortly thereafter he encountered some kind of like Nordic ETs that were humanoid, more human
right.
being like. Do you think that they had some kind of coordination, cooperation between those ETs, or is it possible that they could have maybe genetically altered themselves to resemble those beings? What do you think?
Yeah, I've been asked that before. And I think if you look at the totality of cases, we have many reports of what we call grays, many reports of, I don't like the term Nordic, it's not entirely accurate. I call them human looking. But I have to tell you, I've interviewed people who've seen human looking ETs of apparently many different ancestries, dark skinned, light skinned, you know, Asian, Latino looking. So, of course, we have mantids, we have little blue beings, tall whites, little short people, very tall humanoids. The descriptions, the variations are mind boggling in how many different types there are. But they're all essentially humanoid. They're all very much like us. So I think we can take them at face value, and that when someone sees a human-looking figure, that is what they look like. While there are some cases of screen memories, certainly, where people sort of remember a different version of what they actually saw, I think largely because of the trauma involved in, you know, seeing something that's completely out of your worldview. That does happen. But here's where it gets really interesting. They are all human looking, and that raises all kinds of implications. And I can tell you, and this is not speculation, many contactees have received the same message because they've asked about this. And the ETs will almost always, when, you know, people are not out of their minds with fear, they can have a conversation with the ETs and get this information. And the ETs will say something along the lines of, we are you, you are us, We are one. We share a common heritage. We all come from the same place. We all come from source. And we are all inviolable entities under God. We all live in this universe. And I think that's really interesting, because some of these ETs, yeah, look just like us. So what does that say about who we are and our relationship to these guys? I think it's much closer than we might think.
Yes. Me personally, I'm a believer in the Big Bang Theory and how the universe began forming itself one solar system at a time, and then one galaxy, you know, after so many solar systems. But I was kind of a believer in the mother, I believe in the mother God, but the father God too, you know, our spirit parents. But then I saw a near-death experience on a YouTube video about a woman, and I think she's an old soul. She was drowned. She really was drowned in a boating accident. It's a long story. It's very interesting. If you want to share it with anyone and see it yourself, her name is Donna Rebadow, Rebadow. And she was underneath the water. And she knew that she was going to die. The next thing she found was herself in, like, outer space. She calls the eternity, with stars everywhere. She went through what she described like a veil, a saran wrap veil, which is what I think you might have heard called the river of oblivion. When we come into this world, because it's such a dense environment, we're made to forget who we are before we're born into this world. But she met the creator of the universe, and she had a conversation with the creator. And apparently, according to her, the creator is like a huge energy field, like an aurora borealis, but with all the colors of the rainbow, and an electric being kind of inside, like, for lack of a better way of describing it, the Wizard of Oz, you know, that head there that was over on the stage covered by the curtains.
Right.
And she had a conversation, and it went something like, "Oh my God, you're the creator of the universe." And she heard telepathically back, "I am the creator of the universe." "Oh my God, you know everything." And she heard back right away, "I know everything." And then she continued to have a conversation with the creator. And apparently the creator has a great sense of humor. And after being showed around a few things and had some questions answered, the creator asked her, "So Donna, what would you like to do now?" And she said, "Well, since you created me, I'll leave that choice to you." And then she realized she'd kind of made a mistake. But she went back to her body. And as she was going back, she said, no kidding, it was so funny, she heard, "Good answer!" And she found herself in her body. And then she said, "Oh my God, what just happened? I'm dead. I'm in my body, and my lungs are filled with water." And almost immediately, she felt like human hands lifting her up. There was a rope that was attached to her leg, because she'd been told by this ski boat that dragged her underneath the water. But miraculously, magically, the rope untangled itself from her leg, and it shouldn't have even tangled her leg in the first place, because it was a rope that's supposed to float, you know? And it somehow got underneath the water. It was like a designer death, if you ask me. But these hands picked her up to the surface of the water, and then she felt more hands on her back, slapping her back, and gallons of water came out of her lungs, and her sister was with her, and she was swimming like 100 miles an hour to come over and help her, and she survived. It was amazing. And so going back to what I was saying, the creator of the universe is obviously a creator of bodies, you know, and I mean, just look at all the life here on Earth. And you know, since the creator is omnipotent and omniscient, then one can assume that there is life, this same kind of life, elsewhere, and life that we don't even comprehend. And have you ever read of a book called Abduction to the Ninth Planet?
I have heard of that, yeah. I might even have it on my bookshelf here somewhere. It's been a while.
That is my most favorite book that I have read in my life. That is my Bible, so to speak. I mean, I love the Bible, because it's probably the best account of divine intervention that the world has ever known. But Michael Desmarquette, who wrote that book, and he since passed away. God bless his soul. What happened to him? These ETs are hermaphrodite, 9 feet tall. You know, beautiful heads of hair. So they're kind of like transgender. And of course, they're extremely intelligent, like most of these ETs are. And they have circular spaceships that are like 70 meters in diameter, and they can travel several times the speed of light, and they can go into dimensional. And he was on their planet for 10 days. And what they taught him was just incredible, amazing, who Jesus really was, what happened with Moses, how they interacted with both of them, you know, and intervened at times and helped Jesus with the miracles. And just totally amazing stuff, and including that the universe is divided into 9 categories of planets. Planet Earth is a category 1 on the evolutionary scale, which means we're the lowest. There's a lot of war and killing going on still, even to today. And it's understandable, you know, because we're sharing a planet with animals, you know, and we're not at the top of the food chain. And there's a lot of competition going on. But according to this book, there's 4 forces of the universe. The first force that created the suns, planets, and moons. Second force that created the plant and animal life. The third force that created all the sentient beings out there, all the millions, you know. Einstein was right. The universe is teeming with life. It's just a matter of intelligence, you know. Some people, really, to put it in blunt terms, the bottom line is that some people are more evolved than others. You know, there are younger souls and then there are older souls. And the younger souls are making it harder for the older souls, I think. But anyone that comes to this planet, that is born into this planet, in my opinion, deserves an award, because it's a very hard school of learning in the University of the Universe, is the way I put it.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I don't know if you've heard of Robert Monroe.
Yeah.
He wrote a number of books about astral projection, and he was told that by his spirit guides, that Earth is a very difficult school, but those who graduate are very highly respected. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I do think here on this planet, we have an enormous amount of work to do before we grow up, so to speak. This is one of the main reasons I think ETs showed up in such large numbers. I don't think it's any coincidence that the atomic age coincides pretty much precisely with the modern age of UFOs, the late 1940s, which is when, of course, we started exploding nuclear bombs, when we reached the point of being able to exterminate all life on this planet, pollute every lake, river, all the oceans. This is when ET stepped in, started taking people on board in large numbers and giving them the same messages. And it's very interesting, because I don't care if you're talking about grays or mantids or tall whites or human looking or what have you, they're all saying the same thing, which is warnings against nuclear proliferation, the use of nuclear material, really in any capacity. But beyond that, the dangers of war and aggression, of greed and corruption, of pollution and the destruction of the environment. So I think they're very, very concerned and trying to help us out, because we clearly are on an unsustainable, wrong path towards self-extinction. And it's time we all grew up. It's time to wage peace on Earth, honestly. It's, I think, the single greatest obstacle to open official contact. But it would be great if these ETs would just come down and, you know, help us. But they, I think, respect our free will. It's interesting. I've heard this from a number of firsthand cases. I interviewed a couple who were invited on board a craft in Sedona, Arizona. And they asked the ETs exactly that. Why don't you just come down? And the message was one I've heard many times from others, which is, we can't do that. That's against the free will of all humanity. You chose the situation. It's up to you to solve your own problems. And it's very interesting, because you look at the near-death experiences, which I love. I've got every book on that. They're saying the same thing. And absolutely, I think we need to pay attention to these cases, because there's incredible knowledge there for us to learn from and grow from.
Preston, let me ask you a question on that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what do you think of this? I mean, they say that we have free will and we have to solve our own problems, but what about with Moses? Like taking the Hebrews out of Egypt and with Jesus, you know, that all that divine intervention, the baby born in Bethlehem, the star up above, the miracles that Jesus performed later, all that divine intervention, you know, they say Jesus was sent to save the world. Well, I mean, is that, didn't that interfere with our free will too?
I don't know. You know, it's, there is a bit of an enigma there, because definitely ETs have intervened and saved people's lives over and over again, medically, in emergencies. I've got many cases, dozens, of people who were saved from drowning or falls or weather events or car accidents. So there is intervention, absolutely. But I think that they understand the law of karma as well, because that exact word has come up in a number of contactee cases. And we see miracles going way, way back throughout history. It's very interesting, because back in, you know, before the 1800s, the idea of extraterrestrials wasn't really in the popular culture. I think some of the events that happened may have been interpreted differently and may have actually been ETs. It's very hard to say. We can't go back and, you know, determine that. But there's some really remarkable parallels between some of these modern day cases and ones we hear about in ancient writing. But there's no doubt that we are being looked over, watched over. And ultimately, I think that if you take an objective look at the phenomena of onboard experiences, I keep steering it back to that, you'll see a very prominent pattern of ETs guiding people, teaching them, warning them, informing them, healing them. That is why they're here. I think that's what all the, you know, spirits in the higher realms, whether it's angels or guardian spirits or whatever you want to call them, do look over us and are doing their best to help us to the extent that they can. But ultimately, we do have to learn our own lessons. There's one gentleman I interviewed who had a near-death experience and didn't really want to talk about it except for one aspect, which is the life review, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Yeah.
Someone has a near-death experience. They're shown all the events in their life. Well, this man was not a good man. He said this himself, his own words. He was unkind to people, and every person he hurt, he felt all the pain he inflicted upon them. He said, Preston, it wasn't just that. Every person I hurt went on to hurt others, and I felt their pain too. And so there was this ripple effect where he felt the pain of thousands of people. He says, I barely survived it, barely survived just that life review. And so this is what people need to know, the importance of kindness and love. Our thoughts are like laser cannons, and we need to really take a close look at how we treat others, because we're truly just hurting ourselves.
Yes, I read a book called Saved by the Light by an author named Damien Brinkley. And I don't know. Excuse me, let me take a drink. I'm sorry.
Love that book.
I don't know if it was him you were referring to. But the same thing, he had a life review. And I mean, he was like a sniper in Vietnam. And growing up, I mean, he got into all kinds of fights. And so he had to go back and he had to feel that pain. Like when he hit somebody, it was like a three-way perspective, from seeing it from a distance and being back in his former self, you know, at that stage. And then also feeling what the other person felt, like you said.
It's really quite extraordinary. I saw another lady who had a near-death experience, and she was in the company of what she believed were angels. And they showed her, actually, all these little events where she had helped people, and it was that really mattered. Just these little acts of kindness. She saw this lady trying to cross the street in the pouring rain and carry her groceries. And she hopped out of her car and helped this lady across the street and into her apartment. And that made a huge difference. It's these little events, which is not hard for a person to do, you know, just to give someone a smile, because it does have a ripple effect.
Oh, wait. I was going somewhere this morning with my wife and just going down the road, and there was a guy on the side of the road, and I just happened to wave, and he put his hand up quickly, you know, like people are ready to greet, you know, to accept that form of kindness and return it. It's just that it doesn't happen too often.
Yeah,
Have you heard?
Today's world, I think it's especially important.
Yeah. I mean, reminds me too of the movie. I don't know if you saw it. Not Bruce Almighty, but Evan Almighty.
I did,
When,
yeah. I love that movie.
yes, me too. Morgan Freeman, as God, said, "You can change the world by random acts, small random acts of kindness." And the world needs that saving. You know, just we're evolving, and you know, you can choose to be kind or choose to be unkind. We choose to create or we can choose to destroy. I think
Exactly.
we don't know. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
Yeah, well, you know, it reminds me of, because I did a statistical study of, like, who is having ET contact and why? I was very curious about why some people were being healed and others weren't. And it really puzzled me because I did a whole statistical study in my own files, and I found that it was equally divided between men and women, 50-50. Certainly people of all ethnicities and ancestries. It had nothing to do with a person's religion or political affiliations or blood type or anything that was, you know, immediately obvious. I did find one pattern. We do know ET contact is generational, so they do seem to follow certain families who, by the way, it turns out often are psychically gifted. So that was a pattern. People who have a lot of second sight and this kind of thing. But this is what really struck me profoundly. I was interviewing this lady from Norway who said, "Please don't use my name. I'm pretty well known in my community for doing animal and human rights." She was healed of chronic back pain by little gray ETs who really didn't say a whole lot to her. They just came into her room, you know, flipped her around on her bed like a rag doll, she said. It was quite frightening. Put an instrument against her back and healed her of chronic back pain. And she had no history of UFO encounters in her family, did no encounters as a little girl. This was a one-off. And so when I asked her profession, this is what she told me, that she does animal and human rights activism. That really struck a chord for me because I had just interviewed Reverend Michael Carter. If you don't know him, you should. He's an amazing guy. He's written a bunch of books on this subject. Well, he was healed of a blood clot in his leg by ETs. He was given an award by the president of the United States for his work against discrimination. And I started going through my files. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. There's another gentleman, John Hunter Gray, who worked very hard for Native American rights. He won awards as well. He had a tremendous healing. And going through all my files, I thought, wow, there's a lot of doctors, nurses, inventors, musicians, writers, teachers, people who are doing good work for humanity in some capacity. And that was really encouraging to me and really kind of clarified things for me about why some people are being healed or contacted and others aren't. The ETs are helping those who help others. And that's actually a direct quote from one of the ETs. We're helping those who help others.
You know, I've seen some videos about why presidents don't come out and release the UFO files. Jimmy Carter saw a UFO along with some other people, apparently. And then when he became president, he was going to try to release all the UFO files, you know, and bring it out in the open. But George H.W. Bush, who was the CIA director at the time, told him, no, you can't do that. That's above your pay grade or something like that. And Bill Clinton had an opportunity to come out with it. They've all lacked the courage, you know, to do the right thing, to take the human race to its next step in its evolution. I think Mr. Trump might have the courage to do that. The man was almost killed twice, you know. We got all this war going on still. Our future is uncertain. The possibility of us destroying ourselves is very real. We're riding the razor's edge. If he released the UFO files, I think that would be beneficial, actually. What do you think?
There's been this term being tossed around called catastrophic disclosure, that if disclosure were to happen, it would cause huge upset in our society. Well, I'm in mind, you know, I interviewed a lady, Dolly Safran. I wrote a book about her experiences, and she's had direct contact her whole life. And we were talking about this, and she's like, actually, it's catastrophic non-disclosure. This is what's doing true damage to all society. I think we absolutely not only deserve truth and transparency, it's vital to the health of all our society. You know, countries all eventually collapse due to greed and corruption and this sort of thing. So if we don't get truth and transparency, it's a very dangerous situation. And I am encouraged that this administration has done something none other ever has. I'm not sure how much power our president has to get to the truth, because from what I understand, most presidents are completely out of the loop. They're not really the driving force behind disclosure. The folks behind the disclosure is the military-industrial complex, the intelligence agencies, the highest levels of the military, none who are elected officials. The one percenters, the cabal, you can call them what you want, but they're very hard to trace, very hard to influence. And I think those are the folks we have to worry about.
Yeah.
It's going to be very, very difficult to get to the truth, but, you know,
they're the ones that had a lot of people assassinated who were going to leak about Roswell.
Exactly. Yeah, so we need absolutely to move this subject forward, because what I understand, you know, ETs don't even need government. They don't use money. They've overcome almost all the diseases that, you know, hamper us and cause so much untold pain and suffering. And everyone in humanity, all humanity knew that we could actually live without money. Let's face it, there's enough resources here on this planet for everybody.
Yeah.
And we have spent so much money on weapons of destruction. If we were to just divert all that resource, all that effort, all that time to actually helping people, we could make tremendous progress very quickly. So I hope that someday we can get there. But I think we have a long way to go, and it really does start with just being truthful, electing leaders who will have the courage, you know, to tell the truth.
And they say, you can't handle the truth. Yeah, they're deciding that for us. That's wrong. Some people...
You know, the ETs communicate telepathically. So when you're with them, their lying is not a thing. It's impossible. They know us better than we know ourselves. Just imagine if we had that ability to really read people, to really use our discernment and become telepathic, because I think these are natural human abilities, which have been sort of taken away from us. So it's time for us to really advance ourselves and become more aware and grow our knowledge and experience and wisdom and ethics and morality and reach a point where we can, you know, move past the corruption and the divisiveness and the hatred that's choking our forward progress. And the ETs provide a really good example of that. There's so much disinformation in this field. There's so much fear. There's so much confusion. It's really such a shame because there's a lot of people out there who call themselves UFO researchers, and I don't believe them for one second because they're putting forth a fear narrative that ETs are our enemies. And I just don't think that's credible. If they were truly wanting to take over and hurt us, we would know it by now. They're so very advanced. They've been around forever. We know they go back to really recorded history, probably before that, because they're in, what, we've got stone carvings, their writings in ancient India, Vimanas, hieroglyphs in ancient Egypt. The Romans called them flying shields. ETs have been around forever. So the idea that they're here to hold us is ludicrous. We really need to open this subject up.
Apparently they have command of antimatter. I was talking with someone today. It's not like nuclear fission. If you've got a drop of antimatter, I mean, you can destroy a whole world. And without even thinking about weapons, you know, if they'd wanted to, they could have destroyed our planet. But what I've heard, planet Earth, Mother Gaia, is like a jewel in the universe, you know. It's so filled with life, a diversity of beautiful life. And we're kind of ruining it, you know. But I don't think it's beyond the point of no return, where it can't be saved. But apparently, I don't know if you've heard of this before, every so many thousands of years, there might be some cataclysmic event which changes the rotation of the Earth on its axis, and it reshapes itself. You know, continents rise up from the ocean, others sink into the ocean. Atlantis is one example. Also in the Pacific Ocean, there was a continent by the name of Mu or Lemuria, where there was a very advanced civilization living here about 15,000 plus years ago. And they had anti-gravity. Anyway, Preston, time has flown, and thank you so much. Would you be interested in maybe continuing this conversation at another time?
Yeah, I would love that because, I've got some things to say about it. You know, the catastrophes that have struck our planet. I think we're facing one right now. ETs talk about this all the time, and we all deserve to know the truth about that. There have been previous iterations, previous advanced societies, and I would love to come back and talk about that and all of these subjects. So you name it, I'm there.
I'll send you an email, and we'll coordinate that that way on email. And so I thank you again, Preston. This is the Reverend Blake Ruby signing out, wishing everybody a pleasant rest of your Saturday. May God, the Creator, bless us all here on Earth, all the children of the Creator, and help us in any way we need it. Talk to you next week. Goodbye, everybody. I love you. Goodbye, Preston. I'll talk to you later.
I look forward to it. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.